Hi, John.
Hey, Alex.
Do you know what I hate?
What's that?
People that confuse the stocks with the pillory.
Ugh. I hate that. And you know, it comes up so much more than you'd think.
Exactly. Like in the movie A Knight's Tale. Now, to be honest, I don't know if they confuse the stocks with the pillory, but I had to Google what's that thing in the town square that holds your hands. I'm like, no, that's the pillory. What's the stocks? The stocks are for your feet.
Oh, see, I always thought that was the stocks.
No, the thing with your heads, you put your hands through and your head comes through, that's the pillory.
Oh, because I've heard the phrase like someone getting pilloried.
Yes.
And I took that as, you know, run out on a rail, that kind of thing. But it's
yes, but because of a server full of emails in her basement.
That's right.
Yeah, the stocks, I think, are just for your feet.
Mm.
Either way, at some point, some pedantic ass I heard correct somebody on the pillory.
Open
thing.
This podcast with that statement.
No. I mean, literally, I'm just quoting some other pedantic ass and I'm like, oh, that's funny. I really need to like keep that in my head. So, John, we watched A Knight's Tale starring Heath Ledger and every other famous person from the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what'd you think?
I think it was a fun enough, like, dudes rock movie, almost akin to, like, the sex comedies of the 80s, where it's, you know, this ragtag group of friends up against this, establishment that was entirely too long and had 90 bajillion scenes of jousting. So much that you'd think it was a fetish movie about jousting.
I will agree it was a little too long. I won't even say a little, but I don't even think it's that it was too long. I think that the editing at sometimes would just let scenes run too long. Like the opening part where it's We Will Rock You, it's so delightful. Like what a great way to open a movie. And then it just kind of keeps going.
See, I think this was around the time, or wasn't too far removed from, Moulin Rouge. And I think the advertising was trying to capitalize on, like, look at it, it's anachronistic and then it's wild, where it doesn't matter as much. I mean, people are singing We Will Rock You in the stands, and they kind of, when they're playing David Bowie later or whatever.
Yeah.
But it just kind of felt like this is the vibe of the movie, man. Like, and not that the Moulin Rouge didn't, but it didn't feel like the anachronism was the point. It was more just like, hey, this is freewheeling and fun, and we're doing this too.
This lands a lot better for me than Moulin Rouge, which I don't mind Moulin Rouge, which is weird because I don't feel like that's a movie that I'd be particularly.
No, but Moulin Rouge is so just like batshit weird that like fine.
But this one, I think, gets the like for the joust. And you're right; the joust scenes are a little too frequent. But the We Will Rock You is like it like. Them treating joust as like modern, like footy football kind of hooligan stuff. I liked, and I think they got it across. And like some of the dance sequences are just like, oh yeah. I mean, that's what they would be into, you know, like their version of golden years is some waltzy thing, but like, we're not going to hear that. Like we hear the waltz like, oh, the snooze fest. But for them, that's like, you know, fucking the minute waltz is like the horniest thing in the world.
Right.
You know, it's Lil Nas X for back then. I made a modern reference.
You did. Well done. But no, I think introducing it to the crowd of people doing We Will Rock You also just lets you in for what the vibe of the movie is going to be, where it's like, this is fun. Don't take this too seriously. This is the kind of world we're creating. And I think it particularly the beginning does that so much. I think it really starts falling apart when you start exploring more of the love interest. Cause I think not only is Shannon Sossaman not that interesting, to me sticks out more than other performers in this, but also just that I think that drags the movie down a lot.
Yeah.
Too much time is kind of spent on that when, like the whole, like I said, the whole like dudes rock hanging out, like we shouldn't be here, but we faked your patent papers, whatever. I just felt like spending so much time on the love story thing didn't do much for me. Particularly when she's like, hey, lose for me, but we'll get into that later.
Now, audience at home, I hope you don't hear this, like how badly I dislocated John's jaw for beating the shit out of him for insulting my darling Jocelyn.
Uh-huh.
So the rest of the episode, if he sounds a little slurry, if his, frankly, low IQ, dumb shitness is coming through, because how dare you insult what I find to be the single most charming human being that's ever existed. Mm. I love her so much. Like, I'm worried about myself about how much I love her in this movie. Like, I have romantic feelings for this fictional character.
Yeah, this pandemic's rough, man.
Her smile in some scenes is the most melty smile. I like my soul sings. John, I feel like a poet. Ugh.
The tiny million.
You can't know that. I have a degree in poetry. I always feel like a poet.
Yeah, that doesn't matter. Poetry isn't real. There's no human being has ever read a poem. Because poems are so boring, no one can pay attention to them. So there's just
How
sort
would you
of this.
Know if no one's ever read one.
There's this agreed upon idea of what a poem is that everyone. Because you can say whatever. You can say, like, you know, rise, fight against the dying of the light, homie. And no one's going to stop you because it would cause the whole thing to collapse.
Yeah.
You can't admit to actually having read a poem.
Yeah, like some dumb shit, just writing stuff about like red wheelbarrows or some nonsense like that.
Yeah,
or
whatever. Like, is that a poem? Because people will claim it is, even though no one's actually read it. Like, I have. There's poetry is stepped on stuff. Yeah. Like, we've never gotten real pure stuff because it's just too boring. It'll just put you to sleep. They've tried to weaponize it several times. But it just puts the people reading it to sleep, too. Poems aren't real.
Anyway, so in America, when the sun goes... I was actually just going to start quoting something stupid, and I'm not going to.
All right. Yeah, a poem?
Yes, that was the one. I love her so much in this movie. I may not talk about anything else. We could talk about other things, and I'm just going to go back to, she has the nicest smile that, like, anybody's ever had. Like, I've true romantic feelings for her. I've had them since I watched this movie originally. And you know how much I've got a boy boner for Heath Ledger.
Sure.
That he looks like a bag of shit compared to whatever the hell her name is.
Well, I don't want to question your love for her. I'm just saying it didn't do much for me. She didn't feel like she carried herself in the same manner as all these other people.
No.
Like, I bought Alan Tudyk is more of a product of the time than Shannon Sossen.
Yeah, so I think what missed there, and I don't blame it on her, it's obviously I'm not going to spend the whole fucking thing mooning over her, but they're trying to have her be, you know, a modern woman.
Yes.
She does some of it, and I think that's what the smile thing was when, because she does a good coquette smile, but then, like, kind of mockingly, and she's a little horny, and... It, obviously, for the time, she'd be fucking burned at a stake or, like, have her fucking pelvis chopped off or something. You know, like, whatever horrible things happened back then. And I think, unfortunately, the filmmakers tried to ride the line between having her be this idealized angelic thing that Heath Ledger sees and her have be, like, a more modern, kind of saucy, sarcastic person. And you can't pull that off. Like, those two things can't exist within one character. And
like,
then,
it worked. The closest it worked for me was in the one take thing or one long shot when he follows her into the CG cathedral and they have this, like, back and forth about...
Oh, yeah.
Where it's like that... I think what you're describing sort of comes more into play there.
Yeah.
Than other places.
The thing that the part that I think draws it to attention for me is anytime she's sitting next to a king or something, you know, anytime she's in where she has to play both roles, it doesn't work. But during the dance sequence to the David Bowie dance sequence where he introduces his Gelderland dancing.
Yeah.
It is great, but you see her like, so she has to step in and save him.
Right.
In the guise of Princess Lady.
Yeah.
But then during the dance, she has to act like modern lady. And those just, it doesn't, it,
yeah.
You can't do that. That's
where the anachronism falls apart.
I really liked her handmaiden. I thought for what little she had to do, she kind of pulled it off. Because it's easier for her to be kind of, yeah, whatever, I'm just trying to get her laid. Her position's a lot easier. I don't even know, like, what's the... So it basically starts with you got it. Okay.
Well, just that it starts with Heath Ledger and Mark Addy, who is magnificent in this, and I forgot how much I like that guy.
His whole squad's great.
Yeah, and Alan Tudyk, which for a little bit in the movie I'm like, why are these two different guys? But I'm glad they are because I think they both bring something to it.
I think Alan Tudyk. Has nothing to do till Chaucer shows up and he has like a friend to talk to.
Yeah.
And then it's, oh, this is fun.
Yeah. And Alec Tudyk is always great.
That is
the one thing that I will appreciate out of the Whedon verse is that it introduced a lot of people to Alan Tudyk. But their lord or the people that they're, I don't remember, does it open with him as a child?
No, it opens with his dead knight at a tree.
Yeah, so his lord is dead in front of a tree. But, oh my God, you're on in 5 minutes for the joust. And Heath Ledger's like, well, just put me in there. I'll do it. And
yeah, and they're like, you can't do that. Only noblemen can whatever. And he's like, yeah, whatever, dude. I'm fucking hungry. Let's do this.
Which I just like that. Boom, there's your movie. Like, yeah. Let's just get into it.
Really great start. There's the parts of drag, I think, kind of forget this pacing because I love that opening. Mm-hmm. And then there's some really great character stuff that set it. So he wins the joust thing. And he's like, all right, guys, I have an unnamed number of coins that Alex unfortunately has to use that number in a second to bring up a different point.
Mm-hmm.
You can fight me for them, or you can go on my merry quest with me. And like every other movie, that's when they win. They're like, fuck this, let's get this guy. And Alex is biting his hand, and it's lovely. And you're like, all right, I get the tone here. Like, this is not a fief. Like, this is fun friends in a modern kind of way.
Yeah.
And what an efficient way to tell the story up to that point. But there's a lot of biblical stuff that happens here that I don't get. And I don't know if you picked up on it. I don't mean that in like a snooty way. I mean, I don't know how obvious it is, but like, so they meet Chaucer on the road to ruin,
mm-hmm.
which is, I mean, not necessarily biblical, but like after getting 13 pieces of silver.
Right.
Isn't that what Judas got? Or is that 30?
30 pieces.
Okay. 30 pieces of silver. But so yeah, 13. The fact they call it pieces of silver just was weird. Like there's a weird, but yeah, there's a few like kind of Jesus analogies over it. Those were just the two in the beginning that like this kind of, or maybe it's more like the Arthurian kind of thing. It was just a weird, like, I have them written down as we go, but like, it's just a odd.
Chances are no. Cause the fact that none of this sounds familiar to me is no, I didn't notice them.
Yeah. Yeah. I was just an odd choice, like especially road to ruin. It was like, why even? Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they win and they do the first of the. There's a few training sequences, and it's fun. The first one I find enjoyable to Lowrider.
Yeah.
Where he is training to be a joustist.
Mm-hmm.
And really
join the Joustist League.
Yes, much like me in the video game Joust. Which I still don't know how to play.
Nope, no one ever does.
It's very confusing.
It's the poetry of video games.
It could be, because I've got it on an emulator one time, and so you don't jump on that guy, you don't run into him, don't understand.
Sometimes you can come up from beneath, sometimes that doesn't work.
You got further than me, because...
Yeah, I have no idea.
All I thought about while watching this movie was, I should probably re-download Joust and learn how to play.
Yeah, no, that's...
That and my sweet, sweet Jocelyn. So they learned, Lowrider. So they learned, and they learned, he's like, yeah, I'm going to learn how to joust. It's like a fun little training sequence. They're fighting, they're friends. It's character building.
Mm-hmm.
And they run into a naked Gregory Chaucer and
Paul Buttony.
Hey, very nice.
High five.
Oh, I thought that was an edit for how stupid that joke was. Nope. I'm kidding. It was a delightful joke, and I wish I thought of it. So he's a vision. As a naked fella.
Oh, yep, that's a good one.
Yeah, and
another high five.
Yeah, he runs into a redhead lady, his Scarlet Witch. So
one's getting cut.
Yeah, okay, please do. Terrific introduction to a character, and what a delightful human being Paul Bettany is.
He is so unbelievably charming. This, yes. And I feel like so often I see him in more like nefarious roles. Either he's you know, cold vision or. I watched this awful Harrison Ford movie recently. Firewall. Yeah.
Oh, that's so weird that I knew that. I don't even know that Paul Bettany's in that. You said awful.
Yeah, he's bad in that. That he's the weird, self-flagellating albino guy in The Da Vinci Code, and like, but like he's just charming and lovely to be around in this movie. And
you should watch WandaVision, by the way. He's so good at it.
That's okay.
You have nothing else to do.
There's so many other things to watch.
No, there's not. Just watch WandaVision. All right, so Paul Bettany is very charming in this. I don't know how much we want to spend on this because I don't remember the Canterbury Tales all that much.
Oh, yeah.
The fact that the first book in the Canterbury Tales, the first tale is a knight's tale.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it's important.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's Gregory Chaucer in this, the famous writer.
Sure.
Why is he Gregory Chaucer?
I don't know. I just remember fart jokes from it, that there were fart jokes. Sure, okay. I was in high school, like, and I didn't care. I was in my senior year, I think second semester, my senior year, did not care. I was out.
You actually remember more than I do. I don't understand why he's Gregory Chaucer. It's just, what a strict.
Why like, not? Hey, Toulouse-Lautrec was in Moulin Rouge. We'll put Gregory Chaucer in this guy. I have no idea.
Well, yeah, that's, I mean, like, just even the ages are wrong.
Yeah, no, but I'm just saying, like, if your thing is like, well, we're making this, if we are indeed making an anachronistic comedy.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. Okay.
We're gonna give it some sort of more like historical heft by putting an actual person.
Gotcha. Oh, I didn't understand where you're coming from. Yeah. Okay, you don't know. All right. I'm there with you. It's still a weird fucking choice. Also,
yeah, I don't.
Introducing like one of the great writers of Middle English. It might be modern English. I'm not entirely sure. But as just a naked
that came
degenerate
out in the 80s, I think.
Well, that was the whole thing, was that they melted the winnings.
They did melt the winnings.
Yeah.
And they stopped the world. They stopped the stars so they could change it and melt the winnings.
Melt the jewels.
Yep.
I don't know what to talk about next.
Okay.
I have a lot of notes about Gregory Chaucer being naked. Do you say something?
Well, I did like, so they bring Chaucer along.
Oh, we were letting you interrupt. No, I was just kidding.
Oh, okay. I was excited that someone had something. No, they bring Chaucer along with him, and because they asked if he had been robbed, and he gives this vague answer about it. And it turns out, you find out later, it's because he was gambling. And I liked that kind of reveal that he is this cad, this enigmatic man who seemed kind of... You know, they were able to, you knew he wasn't on the up and up because he's like, yeah, I'll do some fake patent papers for you or whatever they called it.
Patents of nobility.
Yeah. I'm getting it confused with Riding with Death. But he was not on the up and up, but like that he wasn't just set upon by bad times, that he's just a degenerate asshole.
Yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed that. I'd seen this movie so many times that like, I just, when
you
he's walking big
it,
enough,
yeah.
like, I already, yeah.
Yeah.
This was a staple of. What year did this come out? Like 2001?
Because it was I think around.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Because I read a great piece of trivia on this that United 93 that this was the in-flight movie.
No shit.
Yes.
Yeah, it was May 11, 2001.
Yeah. That apparently on some of the 9/11 planes, that this was the in-flight movie.
Ooh.
Yeah, look like somebody didn't change their stars.
Do you think it was in the movie United or United 93? They made that movie about it, Paul Greengrass, to be historically accurate.
I believe so. I have not seen that movie, so I can't really make any further jokes about it, but assume I said something great and witty.
I will. Audience, you do the same. Here's something I don't understand.
Yeah, please, because I made too many notes. I'm like, all of this is
all about his butt.
No, it's just like the 13 pieces of silver thing, and I'm like, oh, that's weird. And then I put, oh, he's on a horse and he sees the pretty lady, which we've already talked about. Like, I'm just making dumb notes about random shit.
So I don't fully understand their setup in terms of like this decathlon of events or whatever, because you can be a joustman, you can be a knight fighting on the ground. I think there's another event.
There's five. There's a bunch, and I'm going to name the ones I know, and there's probably more, but there's joust, there's swords, there's like kind of mace, there's archery, and I think there's another one, but I don't know.
The swimsuit competition.
Yeah, probably. This was one of those dumb things that I think probably when I rewatched this movie in 2008, I should look into that, and looked it up, and I have like a vague recollection of...
I remember looking that up and being correct. I'm good.
Well, I mean...
I'm just saying that's how I would do it.
I'm more explaining how bad I am at everything, where I could have just said, oh no, here's some more. I have to introduce this. Oh, I do know more, but I'm also wrong.
Yes.
Because I can't be good at anything. That's actually my whole thing. It's I'm awful at everything, to the point that even when I'm right or good at something, I have to still be simultaneously wrong. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But how do you become champion of the thing? Because my initial takeaway was that, are you the best at jousting? You're the champion of the thing. Because I didn't get that whoever won, that if that was Adhemar, do you have to win a bunch, like three out of five?
No,
Is it like Mario Party where they just give you stars?
I've never played a video game before. I only read poetry.
Okay.
In this movie, how it works is that the king of the
Mushroom
tournament
King. Okay.
is the guy that wins at joust. All those other ones are just cool shit that can happen.
Okay.
Like, cool best guy is the guy that wins at joust. That's the one that's like king of the tournament. Yeah, the tournament winner. The way that you win at joust, I think, is a, what do you call, like a brackets kind of thing. Adamar fights this guy fights this guy, and you work your way up like college basketball, yes. And then the two guys fight at the end.
Right.
Or like a double elimination thing from that arm wrestling movie, Over the Top.
Over the Top, yeah.
I think it's that kind of concept, but whoever wins the joust is the main winner.
Okay, so I was right. So I was right with that read on it, that it's basically...
I stopped listening to you, I just wanted to talk.
No, that's fine. Yeah. is that basically like, it's like the Oscars, where... Yeah, this guy might be best at sword fighting, but really the big game
Exactly. Yes.
Aaron Brockovich.
Joust would be best picture.
Yeah.
While swords would be, I don't know.
Best supporting actor.
Or maybe best director. Like, you know.
Okay, still good.
Also good. But then like when it's like get down to Mace, that's like best boy grip or something.
You know? Right. Like that's the awards they have on the other day that aren't televised.
Yeah. That's the untelevised awards. Yeah, exactly. That's like oh yeah. He won best squire in Bordeaux. We're the beginning of the movie is just establishing he finds Jocelyn attractive. She tricks him into going into a church on a horse, which is a nice bit of business on her part.
Yeah, I like that reveal that he's just followed her.
Yeah.
Into a church.
I'm enamored with the use of 2001 CGI in this movie. So there's that scene, and then there's the scene with you see her reflection in holy water at one point.
Uh-huh. And that like doesn't track at all to where she is.
And they put their finger in the holy water and you see ripples go out, but they don't affect the reflection.
Yeah. It felt like a CD-ROM game.
Yeah.
Yep.
That stained glass warrior, that first CGI character from whatever the hell.
Yeah,
that,
young Sherlock Holmes.
Was that it? Yeah. It's real bad. But, I mean, it's kind of charming in a certain way.
Yeah, at this point now it's charming. Like, I don't know at the time if it was effective, but now I can look at it and go, ah.
I mean, back then it was probably great.
Yeah.
So we're introduced to that. And then we get introduced to Lord Bad Guy.
Darth Add-on, or what's his name?
I was hoping you remember his name.
It's like...
the guy from Dark City.
Yeah, like a Rufus... Rufus
Sewell.
Sewell. It is Sewell. Yeah. I wasn't sure which of the Rufuses it was.
Well, he's got great vision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Paul Bettany's in it.
Yes.
Oh, I'm hurting you on three levels.
What's that asshole's name? Adamar.
Adamar, yeah.
Yeah.
He's there and he like lights up William. Oh, you're jousting in an antique and just, he, you know what? He goes full Jeffrey Ross on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And gross Master General.
It is it's kind of brutal because it's all somewhat accurate.
Oh, absolutely.
And, yeah, but it's a good setup of him just being a prick because he's kind of got a bit of game with Jocelyn when he's first introduced.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's being a dick to this knight. But then like as it goes on, it's just like, oh, yes, I will win her like a horse. And then I'll saddle her and put her in just like, oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah. You are not a pleasant fellow.
Whatever was maybe at all there before, certainly at the end is now just like, I need to beat William and Sir Ulrich or whatever.
The main charmingness that happens now is Chaucer's introduction to like how he introduces Will.
Oh yeah, where he becomes this hype man.
It is so good. It is like WWF, but
yeah,
there's one part where he's like, I first met him outside of Israel. He was sitting on top of a mountain in total silence. So you can understand the nature of the word whisper.
Yeah.
It is so like this. It's so fucking beautifully stupid.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. But everyone's hanging on his every word. And the fact that no one else really does it to that degree is just beautiful. Because it's all just like, my lord so-and-so from so-and-so.
My favorite character arc in this movie is Adamar's hype guy.
Uh-huh.
That towards the end of the film, he's like, really great guy, Adamar. Yeah. And he tries to do the buildup, and that's such a great. Apparently, so this movie, I did some research on it because I adore it. Apparently, there was like half an hour, 40 minutes of cutscenes, and that guy is like a C plot of him kind of getting won over to William's side.
Oh, nice!
And then kind of towards the end, he's like, "Yeah, kick his ass!" Like
it's funny because by the end when Adamar does get his, there's like a shot of him kind of being like, "Yeah,
yeah."
That it still works regardless, but you know, aside, I think it didn't hurt it to lose all that. But I do like that, that journey of like being wooed by Chaucer, being wowed by him, and trying to do his own thing.
It is such a dumb end, but I fell for it in the way that this movie is just made of catchphrases. mm-hmm. is where Rufus Sewell, it's like, you've been found, you've been weighed, you've been measured, and you've been found in want.
Yeah.
It's such a, like, oh, you fucking prick, but then that gets played back later. Right. But that's this kind of area of the movie where he gets his ass handed to him. Yeah.
Well, because, but I mean, there's also the, is that before or after? No, it is before. Because he does light him up. That's also when I think by this point you've been introduced to the cool lady of the group, Kate the blacksmith.
Yeah.
Who fixes his armor and like then eventually makes like lighter weight armor for him that she's a girl, but she's cool, you guys. She's just one of the guys. And they don't lean on that too hard, but that's absolutely what she is.
See, you've got a different read on that than I do. Not to say that where you're coming from is wrong, is I didn't take it as she's the cool. I took it as she's the functional, like in a world where you're judged by your prowess, mm-hmm. not by your station, which is the entire point of this movie, is that your station doesn't actually matter. You can change your stars.
Right.
Is that she's like really great at blacksmithing. She actually figured out like new ways. Like she basically invented stainless steel.
Yeah.
And so it's not that she's cool, because it's not like she's really, she's not like bawdy.
No, but I'm just saying, I'm just saying like she fits that role. Looking at this as like one of those like ski school or just one of those kind of like surf movies or something where like we have this gang of outcasts. There's always like one cool chick. And that's her. And yeah, you're absolutely right. It does thematically fit that other thing, but in the sort of broad comedic sense that what this movie is, I think it fits that role as well.
No, I mean, there's nothing cooler than a widow that all she wants to do is be judged by her prowess. I mean, mm-hmm. John, she might as well just be putting on cool guy sunglasses. Yes,
that's cool. but she's just...
what you're saying is not...
I'm not saying that it's like she's not womanly. I'm just saying she's one of the crew.
She's one of
the guys in that sense.
Yeah, no, I want to draw, because there is a bit of what in the modern parlance would be broiness to their crew.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I don't want my precious armor smith to be
No, she's fine. It. Yeah. It's not for particularly for being a movie of that time, which like the late 90s, early 2000s is very weird for misogyny and stuff like that. But it's she's treated as a decent person.
As a human, not just, you know, not like, what that over there with the knockers is, mm-hmm. is.
No, but I do have, I don't think this falls under those same complaints, but I do have an issue with,
don't say Jocelyn, I'll knock your fucking block off.
With Jocelyn's requests.
All right,
but that's not till a little later. I do like though, before, like,
how do you even know? I mean, this whole movie, because here's the thing, this whole movie is just, some jousting happens.
Yeah. It's just scenes happen between endless amounts of splintering jousts.
Yeah.
Which I thought about, I was honestly tempted to just do a super cut of just all the joust exploding in this movie.
Yeah.
Of just, because I mean, it looks cool, but man, there's a lot of it.
In the trivia, they talk about how difficult it was for them to figure out how to do that visually.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is literally stuntmen on horses, which another thing, the practical effects of this movie are gorgeous. Like they apparently took like months to figure out how to like hollow out a lance with like balsa at the front and then like have a hollow container that has shards pre-sharded into it, so when it breaks it shoots. I think it's more one of those, dude, we spent so much fucking time with this, we're gonna have a lot of shots.
Yeah, we are gonna make this count.
Though I did one, as much as I'd love in this episode to be another one where I just argue with you for no reason, there's too many joust scenes.
Yeah,
but I did love them kind of, I don't know if they referenced that, but there's that part where he's getting his ass handed to him, which we're going to talk about. And it's just his friends getting showered in balsa wood.
Yes.
And it's just a fun, it is a really comedic sequence.
Absolutely. That's very fun.
Because you brought it up. I want to go back. So you're talking about, this is where they meet Blacksmith Lady. What do you feel about the double Nike swoosh?
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Absolutely not. That reminded me of, there's a movie, and I tried to look this up, but I couldn't find the information about it. There's a movie, a David Mamet film called State and Maine, which is about like them trying to make a
shockingly, I've seen that movie.
Yeah. But like there's this running joke to it that like one of the spot, even though this movie's supposed to take place in like the 1920s or late 1900s, that one of the people footing the bill is like Macintosh computers or whatever it's called, something else. But like they find a way to work that in the end, and it's like it's kind of a joke how they worked it in. Yeah. But that's what it felt like. It's like, well, Nike gave us money for this. How do we work it in? That was, again, as far as like the anachronism not really being the point, and kind of adding this vibe, that just felt like, hey, Nike, everybody, Remember that?
So here's the fun part of that. And by fun, I mean probably douche chili. So they came up with this. They were not funded by Nike at all. They did that as like just kind of a joke. But they asked Nike permission.
Uh-huh.
And they went, oh, of course. Hey, the guy that founded us, his name is Phil Knight.
Yeah.
Like a knight.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe I don't have to defend this movie because that actually made my heart hurt.
Yeah, though that sucks.
I mean, also,
I just want to give Nike a shout out. I don't think they're getting a lot of attention here in 2001. You know, they're a struggling little company.
I did read that at IMDb trivia. So that could be just some asshole made that up.
Like, went, oh, you want to be a great story? I'm going to get on Nike.
His name's Knight. Yeah. So, you know, here's the thing we missed in the era we're talking about here. Just because it gets sets up later that we may want to talk about it. Is Prince William, possibly? Prince Philip? Prince somebody? The next king of England.
Edward, I believe.
Edward. I guess.
Good like, old Eddie.
I guess every white name and missed that one. He rolls into a tournament. He just wants to joust. He just wants to be part of the boys. But everybody keeps realizing it's him, except for William. And he gives him a good old jousting.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Okay.
That's all I have to say. Because it sets up later. Because later he shows up and he wants a good old jousting. Will gives it to him.
Yeah, it's
a... Brokeback Mountain style.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's why the fists are on the end of the...
Exactly.
Of the joust. Yeah, so no one will fight Eddie because you know, he's royalty. You're not supposed to do that, but no one's got the love of the game like Sir Ulrich
von Liechtenstein.
Yes, I like how that name is like just ridiculous enough. Like they didn't. It sounds like foreign, but it's also just like here's the thorniest name that we got.
Yeah,
but without being too absurd, which I think this movie rides that line pretty well.
Yes. It made me feel a little dumb, though. Because, like, I know Liechtenstein's, like, a place.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I couldn't tell you. I mean, I couldn't get it within 1,000 miles if you gave me a pin and a map. Also, Gelderland. Apparently, that was a thing. No idea.
That was an actual place?
Yeah, guess so.
Yeah.
No fucking clue. Yeah.
That's fine.
Oh.
But Edward, by the way, Edward respects this move. Because he's like, hey, I just wanted to joust.
Yeah.
And mom's like, yeah, me too. He's like, cool.
No, I get it. I mean, this kind of comes from history. They talk about, I'm just going to say it's Napoleon, but it probably isn't. But somebody was an avid chessman, and I know Napoleon, like, played chess. And he was really annoyed because, like, everybody would just fucking lose to him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he would just, like, he would play like shit. And people would be like, oh, I got to figure out a way to lose. Oh, uh-huh. there's a great Roman emperor story. I think it was Nero. It was one of the famous shitty emperors. But he loved chariot racing. And like at one point, he fucking fell off his chariot. And all the other people racing against him had to like fake that their wheel fell off and be like, oh, no. Oh, look, we got to go back over that way.
My tummy hurts.
Yeah. So like the other four had to like until he got back up and then like got back on to try to like.
Wow.
Yeah, we're around the part where this is one of my Alex Pepper Lonely Hearts Club Band moment of the episode. He has annoyed Jocelyn because Adamar has basically dogged him and, you know, called him out on being an asshole. And he's like, oh, you're just a silly girl. And he throws her off.
Yeah. Like, I didn't understand that turn because, like, this is on the heels of they just had that dance moment.
Yes.
And then he has this thing afterwards and he's just all pissed. She's like, what should I wear tonight so we can match? And he's all pissed at her about it.
Yeah. No, here's the annoying part there. He's like, I'm going to go naked. She's like, well, she'll go naked too. And like, dude, what are you doing?
Yeah.
What do you do? Because again, she makes my heart go thumpity thump. And yeah, it's awful. But anyway, they have a fight. And there's a delightful bonding sequence of everybody sharing the moment of their true love of the, in their past of like
right to help Chaucer write her a love letter.
Write her a letter.
Yeah,
and it's a really fun dumb scene.
Mm-hmm.
But the setup that happens here, and I like a lot of this movie for it's just kind of dumb character building. Is Alan Tudyk is like talk about a breast.
Mm-hmm.
Women have breasts, so she is completely won over by this letter.
Mm-hmm.
He meets her in a church, and she's like, I want to hear more poetry. And his first thought is, "Mem titties looking nice. Yeah,
bam."
It is such a dumb callback. It's such a fun character moment. It's like, your breasts, your throat, of just him not really remembering what they talked about.
Well, this scene, also, because by this point in the movie, the charm was wearing off a little bit because of the incessant jousting.
A lot of jousting.
But this scene is all done like against the CG backdrop of a cathedral, like the inside of a cathedral. It's all done from very far away in one shot of them like walking. Yeah. And why? Like, I didn't like it. It felt like a play. And so you got to watch their interplay in the space a little bit. But I felt like it could be achieved in other ways. And it just kind of felt distanced at a time that it shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
And yeah, I also like, because I think I was also just, because I was still confused as to why he got mad at Jocelyn in the first place in this. And is this where she makes her demand of?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, if you really love me, lose a whole bunch.
I actually like this.
Yeah, no.
What's your
damsels be
that?
Trifling? Because why should I lose? Like you, like I understand you love me. I don't understand how me. I guess the idea is that because she knows he's, you know, she thinks he's a noble, that this isn't like the only shot he's got in life.
Well, no, it's that everybody else, like you saw all the other competitors,
yeah,
saying I'm gonna win this tournament for you,
mm-hmm.
And the idea is that like no, that's their own like. Oh, wow. You mean the thing you're going to do anyway, you dedicate to me?
Mm-hmm.
What she wants to do is, I want you to look like an ass. Like, I want you to do something outside of your norm. Because yeah. That's the thing that's going to win me over. No, I like that.
My money. Like, this is my job. I'm going to do my job.
I mean,
I don't need to, like, who are you that I need to do this to?
I get with the don't fuck with my money. I mean, John, mm-hmm. I just pounded my chest twice in solidarity with what you just said right
yeah.
there. But also, I mean, she's so, I love her so much. No, I do. I like it as a character moment of like, she's this independent kind of woman. She's been hit on by everybody and no one's ever done anything for her. Mm-hmm. They've done the thing that they were going to do anyway. And just said, oh, it's for you.
Sure.
So she said, well, what's the one thing you wouldn't do? Well, you wouldn't lose. So fucking lose for me. That's what I want you to do. I want you yeah. to look like an asshole for me.
I think that's too far. And I wouldn't.
Oh, see, I like it. I like it as a, yeah.
Cause I don't think he should have done it. Because it seems like manipulative and crummy. Because it is like I'm in a tournament to do this. If like I'll do so many other things for you, you know, whatever. Like I don't know. I just thought it was too big of an ask.
So what you're saying is that you'd be fine with him doing anything for love,
but he won't do that. But he shouldn't do that.
But he shouldn't do that.
Yeah, yeah. It's not that he won't, because he does, but he shouldn't.
Hmm. Yeah, I disagree. I don't necessarily disagree. I think it's a cute yeah. moment. It's,
I think it's because like I was enjoying so much just like the dude's rock vibe of the movie.
Yeah.
And like I was not involved in the love story as much as they wanted me to be, that I don't know. It just felt like a needless complication that I don't want more jousting. Let's just get on with something. And this is not yeah. what I wanted.
Yeah. I just think it's an interesting concept of, I don't know that I've seen it much in movies of actually emasculate yourself or
I fully get it. I just don't think it was the right move is all I'm saying.
What we haven't discussed at all is there's multiple issuances and we're about to lead to his return to England. There's multiple times where we flash back to him being a young Will Thatcher with mm-hmm. his dad. In a movie that I think we both agree is a little long, do we really does this need to be whole?
No, I mean, like, because they try to weigh in on the whole, like, you know, change your stars thing and give him a background for, like, this is a thing he always wanted, rather than just in that, like, moment of, like, well, fuck it, I'll do it. And yeah. that's fine, give us emotional, yeah. but I do agree that they perhaps spend a little bit too much time with it.
Yeah.
Particularly, like, I guess I didn't need the connective tissue of, things are hard up, so his dad's like, he has to leave or whatever.
Yeah.
To his dad selling him to the guy, and the guy like kind of being benevolent and really making sure that it, you know, he seems like a decent dude, but he's checking the kids okay. That little scene, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
It's fine. Just have him be like, well, I went away and I've made my fortune, and now I'm back to see my yeah. blind dad. Whatever. It's not that big of a deal. But yeah.
I liked their reunion. I thought it was like...
Their reunion was sweet. I did enjoy that.
They're two kind of, you know, good actors. I don't know who his dad is, but yeah, it's they well done. It's just the movie's a bit long, so either cut some fucking jousting yeah. or maybe not do it.
Well, this is, and this might be jumping ahead because they're going to England is it England or France where the final...
The final is in England. France okay. is The one where they bet with the French guys in the
bar.
Yeah,
that is so much fun. Yeah. And I like their stupid rhymes about Liechtenstein, too.
Oh,
like
yes. The soccer hooligan chants is really delightful in this.
Do we want to jump to England, or is there anything else you have to...
Oh, no, I did go for it. I have... All of my notes are just, this is delightful, I like this. Here's the part where I say... There's a kid in a pillory. I think that's the wrong word.
He does, per our last previous conversation, this is the point he starts losing for Jocelyn. He starts just like taking hits, but then still like comes back enough. Like Jocelyn's like, yeah, all right, I get it. You did it. But he comes back enough to win. And although he doesn't.
Well, that's how he wins in France before he goes to England. Yeah.
Yeah. But when they go to England, and this is the thing that made me fall in love with Mark Addy, is that so there's a thing at the beginning where Mark Addy's like, I just want to win enough money to go home. They're in, you know, whatever land they're in. He's like, but just when they're on the ship back and they're talking about how long has it been since you've been back there? And just the way Mark Addy just kind of like looks off and is like, 5 years. Like there's so much in just that little read. That is amazing. Like, I want to watch that whole movie. Why'd he leave? What's going on? Like, there's so much emotion and like wistfulness and all stuff packed into that tiny line read. It's amazing. And I just was like, man, I miss that guy so much. Yeah, I've not seen him in anything in a long time.
That whole sequence is nice setup wise, but there's a weird part where Heath Ledger's like, I haven't been for 12 years. But then when you have the flashback to him leaving, isn't Mark Addy as a young man there?
I believe that was the implication, that he's like, this is actually
so
that
it's
guy.
So at some point, his knight that he squires under went back to England, brought Mark Addy with him, and Will Thatcher didn't go with him?
It threw me off.
It's such a dumb thing, because I really did like that scene, but it, like kind of math-wise, wait, no, if you haven't met for 12 years, but then...
It was an unnecessary, like, I don't need to know how they met, man. Like, I don't care. Yeah, they're friends. That's all I need to know.
Oh, God. I'm just glad they didn't do the solo A Star Wars Story where they have, like, a little redhead ruffian in the background.
Yeah.
Or, like, a naked young man running. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
In the... there's a cutscene where you meet Chaucer's wife. And there's another... But he's naked again. And then she's also naked, and it's like a whole... I was like, oh, boy, I'm glad that got cut.
I'm glad I cut that, but I do like that actress, Olivia Williams, I think it is. She was the love interest in Rushmore.
Oh, fuck, is that who that is?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Because I read that same thing, and I had to look it up, because I thought it was maybe the woman who just... I think it's... Is it Coleman? The one who just won for Best Actress.
Oh, Olivia Coleman.
Olivia,
I think it's Coleman.
Yeah, because she's delightful, and I love her, but that would have been hilarious. She would have had to have been pretty young to be in that at that time. But.
I tried watching the cutscenes, and they were fine.
Mm-hmm.
But the movie's already a little long. Yeah. Like I'm good.
These scenes were cut.
As much as I find some of this delightful, there's some early ones where Heath Ledger still got like the kind of white kid dreads.
And I mean, like it's this kind of ties into this around this time in the real world, I guess. There's been a stupid Twitter brouhaha about like someone posting about how long movies should be or whatever. And I always feel like when we talk about movies being too long or whatever, it's like because they not because like they somehow arbitrarily shouldn't be, but it just seems like for the vibe they're going for.
Yeah.
And just like for the pace and whatever, I guess honestly it could just come down to pacing that it just seems off. And I think this is a case of that. Like this, for as breezy and fun as this movie is, I think it gets bogged down in the middle. Yeah. And you could probably lose some stuff. You don't have to. I mean, it's still fine how it is. Go check it out. But I do think, those scenes are probably cut for a reason because you didn't need them. And I don't think a movie needs to, like this movie, it's not like, oh, this movie is over an hour and a half. Well, then it couldn't possibly be good.
Yeah.
But I do think there is some bloat to this
movie. No, absolutely. Yeah. Because there's movies that run like three plus hours that wouldn't even occur to me that it's too long because it flies. But sometimes,
there's even boring, ponderous stuff that I love for being how long it is.
This one is just, I honestly think it's like 3 minutes of editing could have made it feel 20 minutes shorter. It's just, there's a couple spots where just because it lets you drag, it's hard for you to get your energy back up to go into the next scene.
Well, particularly when the next scene is more jousting.
Yeah. So they go back to England. He visits his dad. It's a delightful reunion. But Lord Humperdinck sees him,
mm-hmm.
and he gets caught. It's like, hey, found out. You're found out that your papers were forged. And he gets thrown into the prison, and he's been found weighed and wanton.
Mm-hmm.
Another callback to that, which, you know, there's going to be a comeuppance later.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when Prince, what did we say, Edward?
Edward.
Shows back up, and he goes, yeah, it turns out my guy over here, he found some evidence that he's actually from a long line, and no one can argue with me.
Yeah, what's I like? Well, what does he say? It's uncontestable. Yes, like my word is uncontestable.
It's a nice sequence.
Well, I just like how it's not like because he did this thing for me, I say free him. It's because he did this thing for me, I'm gonna make up this bullshit lie about him that gives him legitimacy.
It's so nice, and he's like that. My dad gave me. I'm gonna name you Sir William.
Yeah,
it's a great thing, Sir Billy. Yeah, that leads us to the final climactic battle between bad guy and William.
Mm-hmm.
And Will gets hit in the shoulder because bad guy has doped his.
Yes, well, he sharpened his jousting spear, his lance, which that was it was. It's normally a line I would hate, but Alan Tudyk, like, somehow his livery won me over. Earlier when Jocelyn and William are fighting, and she has that line about, like, better a silly girl than a man with a stick. And he's like, it's a lance, hello. Yeah. Somehow, like, it's annoying, but man, that somehow he won me over with that. Like, Alan Tudyk is amazing.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah, yeah. He's good at what he does.
But, the bad guy has sharpened his lance and put as his aide tells him, like, it's just spun sugar and boot black fist over it. And he proves this by crushing the fist to show that his point is like, okay, so should I make another one then? Because you just ruined that.
I guess they
you could have just taken it off.
I guess they made a few because there's only so many times you can lance at each other. Also,
but that's one less that I have now. You dick.
But have you thought about this? I like boot blacking very much.
I like it very much. I do not like it in this case. I do not like when it's used for chicanery and not for truth.
It is, and it is chicanery at the highest level.
Yes.
So Will ends up jousting with him without any kind of armor.
Yes, because he's been stabbed with the pointy lance.
With the chicanery.
With the chicanery, right in the chicanery. With it, well, that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, but chicanery.
but he can't even like lift his arm well anymore, because the armor's fucking him up. So he takes the armor off, has the lance strapped to his hand, which doesn't seem like that should be legal, but who cares?
Yeah, I mean, it's old timey days.
Yeah, it's fine. Because they'd be so surprised that anyone thought of it.
Like, yeah,
is that some kind of magic? They'd say.
He won! Hooray! Put him at the stake for the magic he used.
He's ungodly. For the climactic final battle.
Yeah, and he wins. And there is a sequence which I'm going to describe as explicable. No, nay, inexplicable.
Yes.
So he delivers a mighty blow to Prince Humperdinck. And it cuts to a scene of, what's the actor's name? Rufus Sewell.
Rufus Sewell.
I'm going to say floating above sand.
He is suspended above the ground.
And then are the group of ragtags that we've been following this whole time,
who he does not know,
pop up in front of him and says, you have been weighed, you have been measured, you have been found in want. And they kind of, and it's a delightful scene. But then it cuts back to the joust in which he still hasn't fallen to the ground yet.
Yeah.
It was a way
to wrap that up, to call back that little catchphrase, to give him a big one over. And yeah. Like, it doesn't add some drama to it, because otherwise it's just a dude falling off a horse, I guess.
But why didn't they just do that in real life?
I don't know. Because there wouldn't have been time over all the screaming.
And why was he floating in that weird dream sequence?
To let you know that things, you know, if things aren't what they seem, this might just be in his head. It's very bizarre.
No.
Because it's also like he doesn't know who these other people are.
It's so... But who's dreaming that then?
Him. It's him thinking about it right when he gets hit off the thing.
Or
it could be Will. It could be Heath Ledger being like, man, that'd be cool if we did that. We should have organized this ahead of time. And then not doing it.
Oh, we missed one good part though. When he's getting strapped onto the lance, getting strapped onto his arm, and Alan Tudyk goes, "You hear what they just called you? You hear your name? Your name is Sir William. Your father heard that. Uh-huh. And it is Alan Tudyk acting his ass off, and it is delightful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, because I did kind of chuckle to myself when they're like, well, we brought your dad here. To do what? He's blind.
Yeah.
Like, what's...
I just kept thinking about how Jocelyn is holding his arm, and that dude must reek.
Oh, yeah.
She's like castle people.
Yeah.
She grows up near perfume and like privy jars that get brought out by servants. And this is some smelly ass blind, like the odor coming off of that man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you could smell his balls from 20 paces.
Yeah.
And she's just trying to...
I mean, that's what's one smelly ball versus, you know, weighted against the entire crowd. Like, there's got to be just a waft of all those people.
But she's sitting with all the other perfumed shit.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying, you're talking about like a rotten banana peel.
Yeah.
That's like 10 feet away from a garbage pile.
No. But I see what you're saying. But what I'm positing
mm-hmm.
is that she is at the perfume counter, the perfumier mm-hmm. at like a Macy's.
Mm-hmm.
And then 20 paces away from the perfumier counter is where the food court is, and they're just rotting everything over there.
Right.
So when there's no rotting anything in the Macy's counter, it's going to smell beautiful and mm-hmm. lovely. And although you can see the scum in the food court,
mm-hmm.
those Hot Topic going pieces of shit, I see you over there going into Torrid. We uh-huh. know what you do. You're not going to smell it. But if you get one of those Torrid Hot Topping garbage heaps into the Macy's counter, you will smell their balls.
While I appreciate that point of view, I do think that you're too kind to the Hot Topic people, because it's more like a hog processing plant versus just like, you know, like a wet T-shirt that's been on the ground for a while.
Well,
like,
you are from Iowa, the hog.
I have okay. I'll give you a more specific example: a sugar beet processing plant.
Okay.
That stuff nasty.
Well, now I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I figured that would be more in stuff.
Because
you're a vegetarian.
Oh, I thought we were mocking where we're from. Like, yeah, famously.
No, yeah. I'm saying I like my grandparents lived in Scottsbluff, Nebraska. There was a sugar beet factory there. And if you were outside in the morning, oh, my God, oh, it was awful. Yeah. It made my aunt throw up. Yeah. It was so bad. Yeah.
Famously growing up outside of Manhattan. Yeah. I know a lot about sugar beets.
The New Jersey sugar beet.
Yeah.
That's what Jersey Boys is about.
Man, that's it. Will and Jocelyn make out. They play some AC/DC.
Yeah. And again, pointless CG behind them as they spin around and it becomes in the stars and they kiss in heaven. And it's great.
The only kind of real downside is in all the cutscenes, there's no like hardcore pornography between the two of them.
Mm, that was actually Rex Reed said the same thing in his
review. Would have liked to have seen that. Yeah. Would have liked to watch the bang a little bit. I love this movie like a lot. You should watch it. The main thing that I don't talk about this on the show that much, but when I was younger, I used to love like 50s Justin. Movies. I watched a ton of just old Hollywood stuff. It was something that mm-hmm. spoke to me. And this is one of those movies that could have been made in any generation of Hollywood. It wouldn't have come out exactly the same, but imagine the Jocelyn as like Katharine Hepburn when mm-hmm. she was in her prime, and they just cast whatever hunk at the time as the, like, this could have been done in the 30s, 40s, 50s. Like,
it's a timeless tale.
I didn't want to use that term.
Actually, how could it have been done? Because We Will Rock You hadn't come out yet.
No, but
checkmate.
But no, I was about to bring that up.
Checkmaster.
Imagine Luck Be a Lady Tonight or something like that.
Why would you? That doesn't have the driving.
No, I don't mean like the wheel, but like in the there's a gambling sequence. Have that, or during a jousting scene, have Luck Be a Lady, and then him getting knocked
right.
off. Like instead Luck of Be a Lady. There's a
yeah. No, I get what you're going.
This could have been done in any, and like I like that. I like that as a just this. As much as I hate remakes, like fuck it, let's remake it in 10 years. Like just whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Because there's nothing to it. There's literally no originality in this.
Well, it's also like, because it's not an amazing film, you know what I mean? Where it's like, go ahead and remake it. Like, just do another version of it, whatever. Make a whole Knight's Tale universe, because that's what they do with it.
So as I was saying, and John agrees, it's a timeless classic and 10 out of 10, I'm quoting John, so that's it.
It's fine. Like, I have nothing against them. I think it's a little long, whatever. I think if you... for whatever reason don't like jousting, this is not the movie for you, but because there's a lot of jousting, but absolutely I found it plenty charming. Check it out.
Adrian, you watch anything good recently?
Have I? Kind of. I've been watching Better Call Saul, rewatching that, which is just so good.
Very great show.
The performances in that. I forgot just how amazing Michael McKean is in that show, and Rhea Seehorn, all of them. And then I've been watching very uncomfortable cult movies, like Der Fan, a German movie about an insane fan, and The Baby, which is about a social worker goes to visit a family because she got the case about their baby. Their baby is a grown man who acts like a baby.
Oh.
And it gets weird. It well, gets that sounds really comforting. Weird.
Der Fan was remade as The Fan with, who is it? Jimmy Fallon.
What?
Yeah.
This is a different movie.
No, it's The Fan.
No,
it's about an obsessed fan. If it turns out that's actually true, literally there was another movie called The Fan.
Oh yeah, there's one with Robert De Niro, and then there's another one that's I don't know if it's called The Fan or just Fanatic, like a terrible one with John Travolta.
Oh,
where he's got like I think Fred Durst directed it.
Yes.
No, this one is a more sort of austere. It's almost like The Audition meets Giallo meets synth pop. It's strange. It's not for all tastes, but yeah. I enjoyed it.
That sounds pretty good. My recommendation for this week is whatever John just said, because I haven't watched shit. Oh, no, you... Lying.
Yeah.
Wait, what were you going to say?
Because I was going to make up something for you to watch.
Oh, okay. No, I do have a good thing. I forgot that we can
Barney.
I forgot that we can do books.
Mm.
So there's this great poetry collection, JK Dog. The Martian, winner of Best Comedy from recently, the movie. But the guy, Martin Weir, I think his name is. One of his next books is called Hail Mary. He's not a great writer. Now let's put that out there. But he's a very good storyteller. Mm-hmm. And this has kind of grabbed me. It's not something I'm proud of, but I mean, look, at least I'm reading a book, so you know it's slightly better. But yeah, it's in the spirit of The Martian, where the Martian guy gets stuck on Mars. This one is guy wakes up on a space vehicle with amnesia and has to figure things out. And it's better than that. I just don't want to give too much away.
Sure.
But basically, essentially, like he went into hibernation to go very far away, and that fucked with his brain. And it's
that sounds cool.
Guy in the middle of nowhere trying to figure out, oh, literally don't know my name, don't know what's happening right now. And then it moves from there and makes some unexpected turns. It's not high literature. Mm. It's not written particularly well, but the story beats it hits.
Nice.
It's quite good. That's it. Okay. So John,
yes.
Next episode.
Yes.
We are going to watch a movie.
We are.
I would like you to tell them what that movie is.
Well, we weren't sure what we were going to watch. Alex had one idea, I had one idea. But then we decided to split it and watch Split, the M. Night Shyamalan. Turns out it's a follow-up to Unbreakable.
Which is funny, because in order to split something, it has to be breakable.
Right, that's why it's about a different guy.
Oh, yeah. I get it. So,
because on one hand, you have Johnny Unbreakable, which is his name in the movie. You have Dr. Glass, which is his name from the movie. Mm. And then you split the difference with Jimmy Split, who you will be introduced to in this movie.
And then you end up in a village in the woods.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out, not to give anything away, but it's modern day. That's the whole fucking movie. Oh, I guess I gave the whole thing away.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I would have stopped you, but I didn't catch The Signs.
Oh, God. There's water on the table. Run away. The planet we showed up to that's literally blue from water.
Swing away.
Alex. Why did we decide to watch this? Anyway, we're going to watch Split, which I haven't seen yet. It might be great.
Yeah.
I like James McAvoy. He's good. That's it. So we'll see you next time. Please follow us on Twitter at JawsPod. Follow us on Facebook, John and Alex Hate Stuff.
Your friends.
Yeah, tell your friends. Leave reviews. Rate, review, subscribe. Leave things. And if you want to listen to bonus shit, I have a Patreon, patreon.com/AlexMolin, Alex with two X's.
There's shit you can read there too, if that's your jam.
Yeah, yeah. I actually
those gross people.
Yeah, like I like written books, and like they're all there in PDF. You get them for free. But not for free. You have to sign up for like $5 or whatever, but they're just there.
Yeah.
And theoretically, if you count server costs, John gets a piece of this too. So join up.
Theoretically. Help me out, theoretically.
Bye.
Bye.